Okay, it looks like it's time. So let's go ahead and start. My name's Chris Hallam. I'm a senior product manager for Windows operating system security. So that includes security in the client OS and more recently in the phone. And so today we're going to talk about one of our great new feature additions into the Windows 8.1 product, which is basically the security features and manageability features that we added to 8.1. And hopefully by the end of the session you'll realize that probably for the first time that Windows Phone is now really a great solution for the enterprise, where maybe previous versions could be used in the enterprise, but maybe we're missing a lot of features. So I think we've really filled the gap there. But we'll see what your feedback here is at the end. So agenda-wise, we're going to talk about our operating system strategy. So that's kind of a holistic view of what we're doing at Microsoft for operating systems. And then we'll just kind of double-click through everything. We'll talk about hardware that we have in Windows that makes it more secure, Windows Phone, that is. We'll talk about malware resistance, information protection, identity access control, et cetera. Before we get into the meat of the things, I just want to mention that I am going to show you a couple of, for those of you who haven't seen Windows Phone or don't have a lot of experience, I will go through a quick kind of overview of that. But before I do that, how many people are using a Windows Phone themselves? Oh, okay. Well, this is actually a good percentage, so maybe I'll under-index going through that, since it looks like a lot of you are going to be familiar with the platform. So anyway, no problem. I'll probably skip a few slides as a result, since you guys are pretty familiar. So let's start with our strategy. So when it comes to Windows, whether it's for the client or for the phone, we have really the same strategy. And so what's interesting is it's actually kind of flipped between the two operating systems. If we talked about the Windows client and said, hey, you know, what's your core competency on Windows desktop OS? People would say, hey, you know what, of these two things, I'd say enterprise-grade solutions, that's where you guys are strongest at, and that's where your reputation lies. And when we went to Windows 8.1 for the desktop, you'll see that we added some balance, I think. Rather than over-indexing on enterprise-grade solutions, we brought in great devices, we focused on the user experience. I think the truth is we maybe made a couple of missteps on the experience, at least for the desktop. I think the tablet experience was great on Windows 8 and 8.1. But I think on the desktop, I think we alienated some users. And we've kind of iteratively through our updates made some improvements that have made that a lot better, particularly with the update that we just released. When we talk about the phone, it was actually the opposite, right? When we look at Windows Phone 6.5, it was an enterprise solution. Then we reversed course. We made consumer our number one priority, and we abandoned the old OS effectively. And then now we're transitioning into enterprise-grade solutions with this particular version, Phone 8.1. So as you know, we just recently acquired Nokia, and if you're not carrying a Nokia phone, of course, we love these phones, which is why we bought the company. We got a diverse set of phones at all price points and categories, et cetera. And so we really are kind of proud with it. One thing I wanted to show you, and I don't think this gets enough press, this is kind of a consumer-y scenario, but something that Nokia is known for is imagery. And this is something that we're trying to make the value, one of the key value propositions of the phone. So everybody loves to take crummy photos with their cell phones, right? And they look good on that tiny screen, but they generally don't print well, et cetera. This is a photo I took of my daughter in my buddy's wine shop. But at any rate, this is from an unnamed device. And it looks okay, I guess, but you'll see the color's a little dull. And when I blow that up, you really see pixelation, and you see that this is not a super high-quality phone. Maybe looks good on a tiny screen, but definitely not on the desktop. So something that you'll see with the Lumia 1020 in particular, which is a very high-megapixel camera, this is my boy, Owen, but you'll see a great color, obviously. And when you blow that photo up, you'll see amazing fidelity. I mean, I could print this up and put this on my garage door in full resolution. If you look at the fibers of that, his monkey hat, it's pretty impressive. So I know we're here to talk about security, but I want to make sure people understand that, you know, when it comes to photography, this is something that we really are proud of when it comes to the Nokia brand. So I'm going to go ahead and skip the demo of the UI experience, because we had enough hands here up, which is about 80% of you who know the basics of the Windows Phone UI. The key thing I think that's different in Windows Phone 8.1 is we've added some more personalization capabilities. You can add images behind your tiles, so you can have a beautiful image and have your live tile sitting on top of that. So we've added some enhancements there. And there's some other things that are pretty cool there as well. But the user experience, the fundamentals of it remain fairly unchanged. So let's go ahead and dive into, start moving into the security side of things. So when it comes to the enterprise, we have a bunch of scenarios, right? And this slide actually is applicable to phone and the desktop OS. The key thing I want to make a point on here is when it comes to security with Windows Phone 8.1 versus 8, enterprise security goes across the breadth of our key scenarios, right? So when it comes to any scenario, any feature we're building enterprise security along with it. Now, something that is new, particularly in 8.1, is how we're building the operating system itself. So for those of you who's heard of Microsoft One? So there's a few hands. Okay, so that's good. Only one person will feel this is redundant with your existing knowledge. So let me tell you a little bit about Microsoft One. So I've been at Microsoft for, it's almost 20 years. I've got 17 years of tenure at the company. And I've been through a million reorganizations. I've had new bosses, we've restructured groups, et cetera, right? What we've done in the last year has been a complete transformation of the company. We had an operating system team that did mobile, and we had an operating system that did Xbox, and we had one that did desktop OS. Those are now one team. And that's not just on paper, and we've literally moved people's offices. People who used to work on encryption don't work on encryption necessarily anymore. They have new jobs. And we have really made this huge optimization in our resources. We literally had two people working on encryption, one in mobile, one in the client OS. So we've really eliminated a lot of redundancies. We haven't reduced the headcount. And I think we're going to be able to accelerate our development innovation as a result. And so we now have a team, what we call One Core. And that is this One Core team. We build One Core for Xbox, for phone, and the client OS. And so this is already starting to pay dividends in Windows Phone 8.1 because we've aligned more of the features. We've brought more of the code base. And this is going to equal more reliability, predictability, et cetera. So I'm pretty excited about the prospects there. But let's get into the security side of things. So when it comes to the security architecture of the product, our goal with Windows Phone and the client as well is to build security that starts in hardware and also goes in the cloud. So the cloud can give us huge benefits when it comes to security. There's things that we just can't do locally to interrogate what's going on, and the cloud can give us a lot of interesting insights. And I'll show you a little bit about that today. That is particularly true on the client OS, but we have some scenarios where we use the cloud on the phone as well. So, excuse me, we start with the hardware, we have the platform, of course, and the apps. And when it comes to hardware, one of the key things that we're doing is we're working on standard-based hardware, right? We're not working on proprietary hardware solutions to store secrets and boot the PC. These are standard-based solutions. They come from like the Trusted Computing Group. We're a board member on that group if you're not familiar with them. And we have UEFI as an example, TPM, and these other things. So it's really important from a security perspective in particular that we follow standards, and that's something that we do. When it comes to the platform, I mentioned that our one core team is aligning code. Well, we're doing that at the core level. So the kernel is the same and a bunch of other things as well. As we move up the stack, things start to differ a little bit. In the case of phone, we have a device lock versus a user-based authentication model where you sign into the device with an identity. We don't do that on the phone because the phone at this point is designed for a single user in most cases. So futuristically, we might consider having a multi-user scenario on a mobile device, but at this point, at least on Windows Phone, it is a device unlock for a single user. One thing that differentiates the desktop operating system from the phone operating system is the use of sandboxing and app containers and the use of a store exclusively. On the desktop operating system, you can get apps anywhere you want, right? And this leads to all sorts of interesting problems, right? Malware, right? If I don't have a trusted source where all apps come from, then I may be getting apps that are designed with malicious purposes. So because everything comes through the store on Windows Phone, it sits in a container, we have a very secure operating system, and you'll see some great stats from Cisco that we'll talk about later. And then when it comes to the cloud, we have features like Smart Screen, and of course we communicate over the web using secure protocols like TLS, SSL, et cetera. And so let's kind of move on into hardware, and we'll talk about that in detail. So I mentioned standard-based hardware, and so let's talk about one of the threats that we're trying to mitigate with this. So there's a type of malware out there, it's actually a family of malware called Mabromi. Another variation of it is MyBIOS. So if you're not familiar with these types of boot kits, what these are designed to do is they are designed to hide from the operating system by getting under it. And so this is really more of a desktop problem than a phone problem, but it's important to know about this because we've done a lot of work to eliminate the possibility for things like Mobromi on our phones. So what Mobromi does is it's basically a firmware boot kit. It replaces the BIOS of Award BIOS on PCs, and then it actually includes all the Award BIOS instructions that make the system boot properly, but then it also includes a couple of additional ones that do some things that we don't want. In the case of this scenario, what Mobromi is designed to do is it's designed to tamper with the boot process, and it basically redirects the boot process from the desired operating system loader, which would be Windows, and it points it to some other malware, like Allurian or you know, Flame or whatever it happens to be. It could be a number of different types of malware. So this is a low-level rootkit that can't even be detected from the desktop on the client. It's just running too low level, and it's really kind of compromised the whole PC. So Mobromi's key purpose is to hide deep in hardware and to create the condition where it can persist other malware that's then provisioned to the device. So what we've done on Windows Client OS as well as the phone, in fact, it happened on the phone first, is we use UEFI. So UEFI is a standards-based technology designed to ensure a couple things. Number one is it ensures all of the devices that start up on the phone in this case, that if any of them have what we call option ROMs, and then, of course, the UEFI BIOS itself, they can only consume firmware that is signed. Right, so in the case of Award BIOS, the reason why that gets overridden by Mobromi is they don't require signed firmware to take new firmware. So you just put bad firmware in there. Anybody can do it. In our case with UEFI, UEFI won't allow the device to consume unsigned firmware, and so that's a great way to protect the device. But there's more than BIOS on the PC. There could be option ROMs on video cards and these types of things, video adapters, that is, in the case of the phone. And so UEFI won't even allow those types of devices to start if they have the ability to consume unsigned firmware. So we have basically firmware protection with UEFI, and that's the first feature that it gives us. The second is a feature called Secure Boot. So Secure Boot ensures that when that device starts up and UEFI boots and it initializes all of the other devices on the SOC, in the case of the phone, it's going to assure that the next thing it starts is going to be the operating system that you want, which is going to be a Windows phone. So if there's some sort of boot kit that's able to compromise all the defenses in Windows and it manages to write itself to the file system, which is very unlikely that it would be based on how all the other defenses, UEFI is going to stop that phone from starting. It just cannot start as a result. So this is a great defense. I'm not aware of any compromises on Windows 8.1 desktop or especially on the phone of this technology. This is kind of an architectural solution rather than defense that makes it harder for attackers to succeed. So UEFI is central to our story, and it gives us a secure root of trust that we can start the device from. So from there, we have another threat that I want to talk about that we address in hardware. And again, this is an example of something that happens on the PC because we decided to prevent this from happening on the phone when we built it for the first time. And so the threat is called Mimikatz. And so what Mimikatz is designed to do is it's designed to do what it shouldn't be even be possible. It actually exports certificates that have been provisioned to a Windows desktop device and have been marked non-exportable. Well, if you can export a certificate off of a device, you can own the device identity, you can own the user's identity, and you can do basically the equivalent of a pass the hash. You can pass the identity through certificates. So pass the cert, you might call it. So this is a pretty scary threat, and Mimikatz is able to do this because Mimikatz is basically a low-level boot kit. Well, at any rate, what we've done to address this is let's imagine that somebody compromises all the defenses in Windows Phone and manages to find a way to get a tool like Mimikatz on it. It's never happened before, but let's say they find a way. Well, what they're going to do is they're going to export from the tool or from the phone garbage, encrypted data, because when we push down information to the device, we can store its secrets in an encrypted way, and if the data is ever moved off the device, it can never be decrypted because the only way we can decrypt the data, the certificate that's stored on this device, is by using the TPM. So the TPM is a cryptographic processor. This comes out of the Trusted Computing Group. Microsoft's a board member. Google's on the board as well. Apple doesn't participate. But a lot of the heavy hitters in the industry are on it. This gives us a cryptographic processor, and all the secrets are stored inside of it, and they can't be exported, and they can't be read, et cetera. So this is a really important component for Windows in our ability to secure identities for the device and the user. We also use it for encryption as well. So if you're familiar with BitLocker on Windows or device encryption on Windows Phone, we use the TPM as the means to encrypt and secure the data. And because it's standards-based, we're pretty happy with the likelihood that it will do its job over time, because we have a lot of people looking at this and providing feedback on the spec. So TPM is pretty central. So let's move to our next area, which is malware resistance. And so let's talk about some of the threat landscape and how things are changing. So the Cisco report that came out just a couple months ago, it was basically their cloud-based web security report, and they talked about mobile platforms and the type of threats that we're experiencing. They provided some interesting insights. One is that mobile malware on devices, mobile devices, is increasing pretty dramatically year over year. I think that a few years ago, most people didn't really worry about malware on their phones. And I think depending on which phone you're using, you may be able to maintain that position. You should still be aware that there are threats, but you're probably going to be immune to them. There are some phones out there, and I'll throw Android under the bus here, that are experiencing some challenges. And it's because of the way they handle apps and a number of other things that they're doing. So that's one threat. The malware out there is now able to do real harm on the phone. So the malware that we have heard about on mobile has typically been kind of not a big deal, right? It's not as devastating as some of the things we've seen on PCs. Well, they believe that we're now starting to see malware with that level of sophistication, and I'll talk briefly about one of those examples here in a minute. So we do need to be worried about the kind of this new trend that's coming. Malware is now also able to find ways to hide in certain types of devices. So we've done a lot of work to prevent that from happening. We talked about TPM and UFI being solutions to that. There's more to that story. But we are worried about this trend, and I think got ahead of it in the case of Windows Phone. Platforms that have a strong store-based system, like Windows Phone, iOS, are doing really well against this increase of malware. And you'll see here in a few minutes that the malware is really kind of directed kind of at one platform. So those are the trends. And so let's take a look at what Cisco's analysis of the malware threats on different platforms are. So if we compare and contrast different platforms, you'll see that Windows Phone is leading by a margin. It's leading over iOS, the iPad, and Android's in kind of a difficult state. Most malware in mobile is being targeted at Android because they've left a lot of opportunities are just unmitigated at this point. Now, our numbers are lower than the iPhone and iPad. I'm going to go ahead and say that might be a result of market share. I mean, Windows Phone is an emerging opportunity in the mobile space, and so it's not as lovely as a target as maybe Android is, which has huge market share. But here's what's the same between iOS and Windows Phone that will probably over time give us similar numbers. We both have a very similar approach to the way our applications run on our platform and the way applications end up in our ecosystem. And so we believe that that's going to lead towards very similar numbers. I don't think that we're going to be competing with Apple on this in the long term. Unless Android changes their practices in the way apps enter in their ecosystem, they're going to struggle, right? And it's because they're using a model that in some respects is very similar to the desktop PCs we have. Right? You can go to different stores. So it is a store-based system, but it doesn't come from one store that has one vetting process. It's many, many different stores that are run in many, many different ways. And so that's the challenge that Android's facing right now. If you use an Android device and you exclusively get apps from Google Play, you would have lower numbers because they're doing a pretty good job with Google Play and keeping that store. If you're looking for apps outside of that store, you're going to end up with this type of problem. So when it comes to BYOD, where you don't really have control of where your users are getting apps, you don't really know which store you're going to get. So just be aware of that. So I would say that it's possible that if we partitioned Android phones into those that are getting apps from other stores versus their own stores, it's possible that they have numbers similar to iOS and us. Just speculating there, but when you have unvetted apps out there like we have in the other stores, you're going to run into problems. So let's talk about how we protect the boot process from there. So we talked about Mabromi, and we got UEFI. Well, what happens once the operating system starts up? So I have my first binary, it starts. Well, if you can insert yourself into that boot process, you can start with a very high level of privilege. And so there is a bit of malware that's out there on the Android platform that is just as bad as things we've seen on Windows 7 types of devices. This is kind of eradicated on Windows 8 devices with Windows 8 hardware, but similar types of things can happen in Windows 7. So this thing, backdoor Android, oh bad, I don't want to say it, it's a really hard mouthful to say. What this is basically a Trojan in the operating system, and basically what it's designed to do is it's designed to rip you off. It's going to steal your personal data, and the frightening thing that it does is it sends SMS messages to premium numbers. So you're not going to find out about this until maybe 30 days in, and you're going to start, then you'll find out very quickly when you see a phone bill that you didn't anticipate. And there's other types of things it does as well. It's going to download additional malware. It's a very, very powerful, highly sophisticated piece of malware on their platform. In fact, Kaspersky said it was the most sophisticated thing that they'd seen on mobile OSs at this point. And they also said that they didn't know how to remove it. Now, there's probably a way to remove it, which would be completely flatten the device. And I'm not familiar with the practices of doing that on Android, but they said that there's no way to remove it. And I think what they really meant by that, there's no way from a running operating system to remove it, because it's embedded in a very sophisticated way. And that way is it takes advantage of a vulnerability in the way their apps load. There's a manifest that this app will have, and when it loads, the manifest basically sends an event to their equivalent of Task Manager, and that's how it registers itself in Task Manager as a running process. Well, they found a vulnerability that allowed them to load their process without being exposed in any sort of task management UI. I forget what they call it on there. They call it device admin, or what do they call it? I don't have it listed here on the slide, but anyway, they have a process list, obviously, and it's not listed there. So it's completely hidden from the operating system and any tools you might deploy to it. So it's a pretty effective tool at hiding. So how would we prevent something like this on Windows Phone 8.1? Part of it might be with UEFI, so we know we've started securely. But the next piece of the pie, or the story, is Trusted Boot. So once we know that the Windows OS loader starts, we continue to protect the boot process all the way up to the lock screen. And so what we prevent happening during that is we prevent any third-party code from starting within it. So there's no way for any application to inject itself low-level in the boot process and start with the operating system with very, very high levels of privileges. So we call that feature Trusted Boot. It's the same feature on Windows desktop OS on Windows 8 and above. And so basically what happens is once the UEFI starts our OS loader, which is signed, we load the Windows kernel, we load drivers, we load other system components, we end up at the lock screen, and we're not going to have something low-level running in an unsigned, unprotected way. So Trusted Boot prevents something like this boot kit that we've seen. Actually, in that case, it's actually more of a root kit on Android. So once we get the operating system booted, the next thing that we do to protect the operating system that differs from a desktop operating system is we don't allow untrusted apps to run on this platform. And so you have this high level assurance on Windows Phone, and much like iOS, that the apps that you're running are going to be trustworthy, they'll be vetted, et cetera, right? And so the reason why this is have a slide out of order. So that's all right. So once we boot up, the next thing that's going to happen is apps can start, and they're going to come from a secure source. But let's talk about how we protect the core of the operating system and even the applications that can take care of this. So when we build the operating system itself, we use a process that we call the security development lifecycle. So every single engineer at Microsoft, whether they're a program manager who writes designs, whether a developer who implements code, or a tester who verifies it and does quality assurance, they go through this extensive training. It teaches them, what are the risks when I'm writing a design? How do I mitigate potential threats? So they go through this extensive process, and they learn how to write quality code, secure code, and secure designs. We started this process back in the XP era. So if you remember Windows XP and Code Red and Slammer, that was a big aha moment for Microsoft. We needed to find out how do we prevent our engineers from developing code that will allow these types of threats to occur in the future, and that was where SDL came from. This has been matured over the last 14 years, and I think we're pretty much at the top of our game. A couple years ago, almost 2012, Microsoft products, which were always in the top 10 list of products that had vulnerabilities, started to come off those lists. We now have other things up there. There's like Adobe Readers and Flash and these things. They dominate the top 10 lists. It's no longer Microsoft products. Now, what's interesting in my view is if you look at the total code base of Windows and you compare that with Flash, we're talking about many, many, many magnitudes of order, right? So the total lines of code in Flash is just, it's like a drop of sand in the ocean compared to the Windows code base. So it's actually surprising given that we were ever able to get off that list. But we did because we use this process. But the reality is I promise you, and I say this somewhat in jest, we're going to ship more vulnerabilities. And the reason why is no matter how good this process is, we have human beings who write this code, and there will be vulnerabilities in our process. So what we do to mitigate those is we take advantage of a couple technologies that you see listed in the bottom. One of them is called ALSR, and the other one is called DEP. And so what these are designed to do is to mitigate the potential for somebody who finds a vulnerability in any of our code or an application's code from being able to successfully exploit it. So if you're familiar how an exploit works, an attacker will find a vulnerability in the software. Maybe it's in core Windows, maybe it's in an app. Well, from there, they need to inject something into system memory. And they need to inject it in a very, very specific place. They can't just put their app in there and hope it works, because we have if you think about memory, it's a list of all the code that's running, all the functions are present, et cetera. What they need to do is they need to find a location of memory that will be executed later on during the natural course of this PC or this mobile device running. So what they want to do is find maybe the beginning of a function, and then they want to overwrite the beginning of that function with their own. Then later on, as this mobile platform continues to run, eventually that function is run, and then that bootstraps a process of downloading an additional malware, et cetera. That's kind of typically how an exploit works. The way we mitigate that is we make it so those memory addresses are completely unpredictable with ALSR. So ALSR basically randomizes system memory. So rather than it being laid out in a sequential way where it's very predictable, the attacker's not going to have any clue where anything is. And so that reduces the likelihood that they can successfully insert a malicious code in a way that will execute naturally as the system does its normal operation. So this is very, very effective in limiting exploits. The next thing we have is DEP. Well, turns out that most code that's running in memory doesn't need to be executable. And all vulnerability exploits depend on the ability to insert something in memory that will be executed later. Right? That's how they bootstrap their process. So with DEP, what we can do, data execution protection, is we can mark any application that runs can mark subsets or maybe almost supersets of its memory as read-only. And then the sections that need to be executable, which are usually a small subset, are marked executable. So even in the event that an attacker found a way to understand how the memory is being randomized, or maybe they just spray things into memory hoping they can land on a good function, they now have a dramatically reduced surface area where they can insert their junk. So the combination of ALSR and DEP make it very, very unlikely that an exploit that is, a vulnerability that is discovered on Windows Phone 8.1 or even on Windows 8 or better will be able to successfully execute. And so we have this applied across the whole operating system, and the apps will take advantage of that as well. So this is a slide that was out of sequence. So let's talk about the apps and how we prevent apps from misbehaving. So all apps on Windows Phone 8.1 are designed inherently to take advantage of a feature that we call the app container. Now, if you're familiar with Windows Phone 8, we actually called it a chamber. So if you're familiar with that technology, app container and chamber were the same. But because we had two different groups working in Microsoft on operating systems, one called a chamber, the other one called app container. So the marketing name became app container. So it is the same thing as a chamber if you're familiar with it. What a chamber does is it ensures that an application is inherently running with least privilege. So all the malware problems we find on desktop apps is because apps run with very high levels of privilege. They run with your privilege, and that very likely is administrative level. So all apps run with almost no privileges, and then apps then in their manifest, which is basically the list of things that this app does, they actually ask for specific capabilities. And so a capability is, for instance, I need access to the file system. I need access to the GPS. I need access to these different things. So an application does not have the ability to arbitrarily do whatever it wants, like we have on a desktop operating system like Windows or OS X or Linux. It's constrained inherently to the capabilities that it's declared it needs. It can never venture on beyond that. So this is a great way of containing and constraining what an application can do. And this is why Windows Phone and iOS have been so successful in the malware resistance area, because they're not only do they come through a vetting process, but they also are very, very constrained. They only get the privileges and access that they need. Now, something that sets us apart in Windows Phone is, and also Windows Client OS, is we have these constrained apps, but they also can communicate with each other. So there is a structured way of an application can communicate with another. So we have these things called what we call a source target, or a source contract, and a target contract. So a source target contract would be something like IE. So when I go to the web, one of the source contracts would be to be able to share information about where I'm at. So let's imagine I'm on a website and I find a really interesting article and I want to share that to email, right, or to a friend on Facebook, or I want to post it on my Facebook page or whatever. IE has this contract capability. It can go grab the URL, it can grab a picture, it can grab a little bit of text and put this in a schema that then can be transferred to an app that supports IE's source contract, and that's the target contract that the app would implement. So Mail has it, Facebook has it, et cetera. And so this enables us to have very constrained app-to-app communication. This is something that sets us apart from some of the other mobile platforms out there, is we have a very secure way, a constrained and controlled way of communicating between applications. The next thing that we have for apps is we got sandboxed apps, but they also come through the store, that you know. So every app that's submitted to Microsoft goes through a fairly extensive process and review to make sure that it comes from a reputable person, that we take a look at the application, and based on the reputation of the vendor, determines how much we look at that application. And so at the end of the line, we end up with applications ending up in the ecosystem that are very likely going to be free of malware. Now, that doesn't mean that you'll never have malware entering into the store, but the likelihood that it happens is obviously far less than you'll experience on desktop operating systems. So the store is central to our story, and it's central, I think, to the success that you saw on the previous slide from Cisco. So if you have app security, and we've got contained apps, we're doing a good job there. Well, where's the next threat? Well, the next threat is the internet. When users are going out and they're using their browser, and going online, there are all sorts of toxic things out there on the internet that are going to be thrown at your device, right? We don't have a store vetting process that's protecting us, right? It's just wherever you go, they're going to try to hit you with what they got. So with Internet Explorer 11, there's a couple things going on. Number one, we have app container support. So this app, just like every other app, is going to run in a container. So even if somebody sends something that crashes the browser or causes it to misbehave, the damage is contained to the app itself, right? So unlike our desktop operating system, where when you exploit IE, you may be able to deploy new software and do drive-by attacks, an app-contained app doesn't give that opportunity. In fact, if you're familiar, you remember the IE vulnerability last week? Was it 2 weeks ago, Milad? Yeah, so like 2 or 3 weeks ago, where we had emergency patch IE because of Flash. That vulnerability in Flash couldn't be exploited when you were running Windows 8.1 in the modern browser because it sits inside an app container, and of course Windows Phone was protected from this as well. So this is just a superior model and architecture for us. The next thing that's important for a browser is these plugins are a big problem. And so we've decided, much like Apple has, that plugins in the browser are just something we're not going to support. So we don't even allow Adobe Flash on our mobile phone. So when you have plugins, the big problem we've seen is the plugins have vulnerabilities. The plugins run with a lot of privilege on a desktop operating system, and the plugins usually are never updated. So they don't have Windows Update pushing updates to you and keeping you up to date. These things get deployed and they don't get updated for years, and every vulnerability kind of lives for, it's like 0 day forever with some of these plugins. So the plugin model is a dangerous one. That's why we don't allow it on the phone. The next thing we do is we protect your identity. So we use Credential Locker to protect any passwords that you use on a website. So when you log into your bank or whatever, and you provide a username and password, we can store those credentials in a secure way in our locker. We also have do not track protection, so people can't use our location data. And then we have another feature here that's pretty interesting here called Smart Screen. And so Smart Screen on the desktop is a little different than on the phone here. On the desktop, it protects you against malware applications you might download, because we allow them to come from sources other than the store. And then it also protects you against mischievous and bad URLs. So Smart Screen on Windows Phone provides a URL reputation service. We have a cloud-based service that every day constantly is crawling the web, looking at sites, looking for malicious sites that are designed to steal your identity, to lure you to malware, etc. So this is a pretty powerful system. In fact, if you go to NSS Labs and look up URL reputation, you will find that amongst Chrome and IE and other browsers out there, that we lead handily in our ability to prevent you from ending up at these malicious websites. So let me just show you real quickly what the experience is when you go to a website that has a bad reputation. Oops. All right, so here's my phone here, and I'm going to go ahead and sign in real quick. And I will be changing my PIN when I leave here, because this one actually is my personal phone. So don't tweet that Chris just exposed it. I promise I change it. All right, so what we're going to show you. Let's go to the browser here. All right, well, that's not going to be as dramatic as I wanted. I'm already on the bad website. Let's try again. All right. All right, so let's say I'm at MSN. I go to Bing. And I search for a site, and I end up getting lured to malvertising.info. You can go do this on your own device if you'd like. This is our site. And what will happen is we have a URL reputation service, of course. Before the browser goes to the website, it quickly contacts the service, verifies that this URL is in a whitelist, or not in the blacklist, actually, or the deny list. And if it is, it's going to give you this warning. I can get more info. If this is a legitimate site, and somehow this ended up on our deny list for the wrong reason, you can report to that to us, and we'll do an investigation to make sure that we can pull that out, if that makes sense. So there is kind of a recourse if you end up in there accidentally, if it's your own site. That doesn't happen very often, incidentally. In fact, at RSA, it's pretty funny, RSA, somebody came up to me telling me about their business's website being in that list. And I was like, wow, that's really interesting. That doesn't happen very often. We did a little investigation, and this person, turns out they actually were working for a company that was putting up phishing sites in the end. We have a lot of good checking and vetting processes to make sure that we don't get duped when people report things that technically still should be in that deny list. So that's how it works. Similar experience on the Windows desktop OS. You'll have some additional options. You can actually here disregard and continue into this website here. There is a policy that will enable you to prevent that from happening. So if you want to let people go to bad sites, even when they're warned, you can do that. But our recommendation is deny them the ability to do that, because we're right 99.9999% of the time. I do not know why we have the option out there, but customers asked for it, so we gave them that option. All right, so let's go ahead and go back to the presentation here. So quick demo there. You know, we have some great stats here, 230 million phishing warnings. So that gives you an idea of the magnitude of this threat. That's how many we've detected. And to be honest, that number is like 8 months old. So the number's way higher. And then 17 trillion lookups. So this is a very high performance system. This doesn't really delay you from getting the website that you want to get to in any way. And you'll be glad that delay happened, because it's only milliseconds, because it's really giving you a lot of protection, as you can see with that $230 million number. So let's talk about data protection. So to protect internal storage in Windows Phone, we have a feature called device encryption. For those of you who are familiar with BitLocker on Windows OS, this is the same technology. But it does have a different name. So it's the same underlying code, but we call it device encryption for this reason. Device encryption is something that is automatically provisioned to your Windows Phone device if, so I want to underline if your device becomes managed. And the policy from the management system says I want device encryption to be on before I'm allowing my email data to get provisioned to the device. So it is an optional feature. It's not automatically there. Now, some people will ask, well, why isn't it automatically there? Shouldn't it be automatic? Well, that'd be an okay idea. Here's why we don't do it automatically. This phone has memory chips that are baked onto the board, right? So the reason why BitLocker is important on PCs is I have a fixed disk that I can pull out in probably a couple minutes in most cases. And then I can take that disk, I can put it in another PC, and I can access that data. I can't do that on the phone because the chips are baked. So you'd have to basically desolder the chips if you could, and then you'd need to put in another device. So you're not going to get access to this data. So that's one of the reasons why we've made that choice. It gives us some performance optimizations, and the data at rest protection is done because the chips just aren't physically removable, and there's no ports on this device that would allow you to get access. So I can't boot to a USB drive on another operating system and access those chips. It's just not possible. So you need to think differently about data at rest protection on a phone. One of the reasons why we do have it for enterprises is there may be compliance reasons why it's required. Now, you could argue that it adds additional protection. So, you know, if it's the CIA who steals my phone, they've got all the tools in the world, right? So that encryption will protect you against them or the NSA or equivalent. So it is added protection. But under normal circumstances, you have a very secure data set on the device. So we do handle it a little differently. When you implement, when you implement the requires device encryption policy, it will automatically get turned on. It's going to run in the background. The user won't even know it's happening. So this is a kind of a very light touch thing. Policy shows up, encryption happens as a low priority thread. Eventually, it gets encrypted in the background. Doesn't take much time because these are pretty small disks. And it will be encrypted with 128-bit encryption, and the user is going to be required to put in a PIN. Without a PIN, the encryption is kind of useless, right, because they can access the phone. So that is one protection you need there is to prevent them from getting access, because then they have data, your access to your data anyway. All right, something that's new for Windows Phone 8.1 is we've added protection for removable storage devices. So some feedback that we had is, you know, wouldn't it be great if I could add a removable storage device? And we're thinking that's a great idea, of course, but well, what happens to my apps and stuff that end up on that? Well, they're going to be unencrypted, and you may have very confidential app data there. Your Wells Fargo app or whoever your bank is, that app may end up on that storage device depending on how much room is available on the fixed storage device. So we encrypt that for that reason. What we do not encrypt, and by the way, that's automatic. That's not a device encryption policy thing. The second you put removable storage in there, any apps that show up on that will be encrypted for the reasons that I described. The section of the or the partition that won't be encrypted is the partition where your personal media goes. So photos, music, videos, those will not be encrypted. So futuristically, you know, we may want to talk about encrypting that. At this moment, we don't. The reason why we're not doing it is because we want that SD card, which is designed to be removable and put in other PCs, to be accessible. And if we encrypted it, guess what? That wouldn't be able to happen unless that other device had some sort of way to understand how to get access to that encrypted data. Encrypting it would prevent it from being portable unless you went to a device that had special software. So keep that in mind. Your photos, media will be on an encrypted partition, but your apps and private app data, passwords, these types of things that might not be on the disk will be protected. All right, so let's talk about protecting data in use. So there's two features that are important. One of them was in Windows Phone 8, and that is Office IRM. So for those of you who are familiar with Office IRM, that's using Windows Rights Management Services, and that gives us the ability to add two things: persistent data encryption. It also gives you the ability to add rights management on top of it. So with rights management, I can say that, for instance, this person can receive the email and they can open it up, but they can't copy paste content out of the body of the email or out of the body of the document. In the case of a desktop PC, it would prevent them from printing potentially. So rights management gives us more than just encryption. It gives the ability to control the use of the data. IRM is an Office feature, and it leverages, again, Windows rights management services. So it requires a pretty sophisticated backend to enable this. And so it's pretty popular, and it's actually changed just recently. In October, we added a new version of rights management services. It used to be an on-prem solution. We now have a cloud-based solution. It's called Azure Rights Management Services, coincidentally. And this will allow you to do B2B and B2C communication with protected data, which is something you weren't able to do before very easily. So because we now have a cloud-based authentication service with Azure Active Directory and a cloud service, we can now share information with people that don't work in our company and don't have domain accounts. So it's a pretty interesting innovation that we've just added. I think that shipped in October or November of last year, and so this would be useful on the phone as well. Now, one of the features that a lot of our customers were asking is a lot of them we have a lot of people who use Office IRM, and that's great. We love those customers. But some of them are using something else, which is S/MIME. So with Windows Phone 8.1, we've added S/MIME support. So you'll be able to provision certificates to these phones using an MDM. And those certificates can be used for the signing and the encryption of email, just like you're already doing in your organization. Just out of curiosity, how many people here are using S/MIME-based mail in their organizations? It's generally a small group of people, you too, okay? All right, so not a lot, but I'll tell you what, if you don't have this in your phone, you can't get in those organizations that have it. So it is a table stake, particularly in government and other types of institutions, those who maybe do business with government, public sector. So that's a great new feature for those of you in that area. So let's talk about protecting data in use. So one of the threats we have to data on any type of devices is the applications can maybe move it. And so having an app control mechanism is very important. A lot of our customers are not comfortable with the fact that their personal information or their corporate information can end up on these cloud-based services. And this is not the only threat, by the way, but this is the one that people typically are saying, hey, can I stop people from putting stuff on Dropbox or some of the others? So that's why I've kind of listed these. And I could have put even OneDrive up there, but I didn't. So that should be listed there technically as well. So a lot of customers are asking for this capability. So we just added this on Windows Phone 8.1. We now have a app allow and deny list. So you'll be able to say these are the apps we allow, or these are the ones we deny. And there's a couple things that are interesting about it. If I go to the store, for instance, let's say, so what you can do in IT is you can say, these are the apps we want people to use, these are the ones we don't, et cetera. If somebody goes up to the store and you have a policy that prevents the ability to use Wordament, not sure if you'd want to deny people from doing that, but if you did, this is the experience they'd have in the store. You'll see there, when I go to the store, you'll say, you see here in the middle, this app is not available to your device. Tap here for more info. And this more info will be that your IT guys have screwed you. So anyway, they don't like to see this message, but at least your data will be safer with it. So this is the experience they'll get there. If they already had the app and you later on you deploy this policy, well, what happens there? Well, the app will be installed, but you'll see that now it's been disabled. So when something shows up in the deny list after the fact, they'll still have the app installed, but they won't be able to run it and execute it. So you can deal with that type of scenario as well. And again, they have a pop-up there that they can get more info. And this is, in fact, this is what will happen if they try to select that. And we showed an example of denying Internet Explorer. We've had a lot of customers who say, hey, we don't want people using the web on this device. It's maybe designed for other purposes. So you can use that feature there as well on inbox apps, not just those coming from the store. So let's talk about protecting data that's in motion. Anytime you're connecting to the web, you want to be able to use SSL or TLS, et cetera. Windows Phone 8 supports that. So you're going to be able to have encrypted communication as you're working on the web. So no big surprise there. That's been around for a while. What is new to Windows Phone 8.1 is the ability to connect the phone to your corporate network using VPN. So that's an awesome new feature. So we're pretty excited about it. We've had a ton of demand for it. It supports all the protocols you would expect. And it supports all the major VPN vendors. So you'll see Checkpoint, Microsoft, F5, et cetera. One name that you're not seeing on that list is Cisco. So we're still working with them to get that sorted out. But these are the ones that are available in this moment. So just be aware of that. One other thing we have, too, is we have app-triggered VPNs. So you are able to configure these are the apps that require the ability to automatically connect to a VPN. So that leads to a great user experience where they don't have to go out of their way to connect to the VPN to use an app. The app will automatically trigger the VPN connection experience. So that's brand new there. Another feature that we have, it's new. This is also coming from Windows Client OS. So this is something where we took the code from the Client OS and we moved into the phone, is a feature that we call remote business data removal. So remote business data removal is what we call a selective wipe capability. And so what we can do is when you have a BYOD device, like a phone, we don't want to nuke your photos when we do the device wipe. We want to get rid of the corporate data, right? That's all the corporation generally cares about. So with remote business data removal, as the name implies, we're able to remove just the corporate data that was provisioned to the PC. So that's going to be your apps, it's going to be your files that you push down, certificates, VPN connections, anything that has to do with your configuration that comes from the MDM can be securely wiped off of the device in a secure way. So it's a great new feature, and it's exactly the same between the two products. This is kind of how it works with kind of an animation. The user would enroll in your management system. That management system could be Intune, but it also can be AirWatch, MobileIron, all the different MDM companies are supported with this. User enrolls, they're going to receive corporate apps, data, policies, etc. Later on down the road, IT is going to decide the relationship between them and that device or that user has ended, and they'll initiate a wipe command, and all that stuff goes in the trash can, and then it's gone. So let me show you very quickly how that works on the phone. Switch devices here. And I'm going to pray to the demo gods, because this demo takes time to set up. And so I didn't dare change it after I thought it was set up properly, because I knew it was going to be a bear to get set up again, especially with the network connectivity we've had here at TechNet, or TechEd. All right. Oops. Let's see here. All right, so this is a different phone here. So we'll go ahead and sign in. You know, this is not set up as elegantly as my other phone here, but you see a number of icons, and some of these represent corporate data. Now, if we go into settings, and actually, you know what, that's the old way of doing things. Let me show you how to get the settings the fast way. So in Windows Phone 8.1, I have the ability to get some of the things I need quick access to, like airplane mode, and I can also get the settings pretty quickly that way, so I don't have to search for it. So that's a feature that I really like. Now, you'll see here that I have my my Contoso account. So that was provisioned from the MDM, along with a couple of the apps you see there in the screen. Let's see here. One other thing we've done, too, with this MDM is we've prevented, using policy, the ability to add additional accounts. So if you want to lock that device down and you want to prevent people from using Facebook or some of these other types of providers, you have policy control to do that, and that's new in 8.1 as well. But just take note that I have an email account, I've got some apps running on the screen, etc. So let's go ahead and see what happens when we initiate the wipe command. Now, the easiest way to initiate the wipe command, because I'm not connected to Intune, is to go to the workplace scenario. So let's imagine I'm quitting today, and I don't want any of that corporate data on my device. I go ahead and go into the workplace zone in settings. I can delete this. And what's going to happen is remote business data removal is going to start destroying apps, removing configuration, etc. So you'll see it looks like it's gone. And so you'll see that corporate app there, oops. I see one of the corporate apps is gone. You'll also see, oops, let's go the easy way, that my email configuration is gone. And I'm expecting now I can also add Facebook now. So all that configuration policy gone in like seconds, So pretty cool feature. Works basically exactly the same way on Windows Client, and that takes Windows Client 8.1. Okay, so that covers that. Let's talk about some other control-related options that are related to the device. So Windows Phone has a long list of policies. We didn't have a chance to list them all. There's brute force protection on the pin that would trigger an automatic device wipe as an example. We have remote ring, remote lock, a lot of the things you'd expect. We have policies for all of these things. So if somebody loses their device, they'll be able to find it. And then we also have policies to prevent users from unenrolling, which is a very important policy. If there's a corporate-owned device, you do not want them to unenroll. If you're familiar with the Los Angeles, they issued iPads out to all their users, and they didn't want them to use them for personal use, and so what did they all do? They all unenrolled their devices from management, and then they surfed the web as they saw fit. So they had a big problem there, and I'm not throwing Apple under the bus there necessarily, but this ability is very important. That's new as well. So let's talk about identity and access control. So unlike a Windows client OS, where we use an identity to sign in, we're going to use device unlock on Windows Phone. Now, down the road, I could see we might change that, depending on what we do with the phone in the future. The mentality for a device unlock is because it's designed for a single user, that we don't really need to have a user profile, right, like we do, right? We don't have multiple users sharing the device, so adding all that code to support that isn't necessary because it's really just one user. So we just have a device unlock concept like the other phones out there. Now, one thing that we do have on Windows Phone is we do have Kids Corner. So a lot of people like to share their phones with the kids to keep them quiet while we're at dinner or driving around the car. So we do have that. It's not a profile necessarily, but it does give them a lockdown experience where they can have fun and you and your companion can have conversation without interruption. So anyway, that's how we secure it that way. We have Credential Locker, which is used for secure storage of usernames and passwords. So as you travel the web and add accounts and log into sites, we'll save those and we'll secure them using Credential Locker. It's all encrypted, but again, we also have that basically the protection on the disk. You know, you can't remove it, etc. So we have the data rest protection as well. We also protect all that account data as well with Credential Locker. So when you add your Facebook information, we store that there. So Credential Locker is kind of the single store for protecting data in that way. Now, it's really important to know that some of this data in Credential Locker can roam. And so I underline personal because I don't want to scare you about the implications here. So all this corporate data that comes down from the MDM, like email configuration, VPN configuration, et cetera, that is not going to roam to other Windows devices. But your personal information, so if you use your phone and you log into your bank and you save the password in Credential Locker, that information will be securely moved to another Windows device that you might have. So Windows Phone, Windows 8.1, or even 8, this stuff gets replicated through OneDrive. So this is an awesome experience, actually, that when I log into my phone and I go to that website for the first time, and I type my username and password, then when I go to my PC and I go to that site, that information is going to be there as well. So this synchronization, it raises the security concerns. From an enterprise perspective, we don't roam that data, but your personal information we do, and we think you'll appreciate that. You can disable that if you want, so you are in full control, but the corporate data won't be roamed. Something that I really like, too, is my my Bing history roams as well. So when I go into the browser and I type a website, if I go to my PC, I'll see those as recent hits there as well. So I have this common browsing experience between the two. I don't have to rebuild that and find old websites and favorites and these things. These are all shared. In fact, the favorites are shared as well, which is nice. So let's talk about certificates. So we've made some big changes there. You can now provision certificates without doing it in an insecure way. So on the last version of Windows Phone, the recommendation is email your identity in email and then double-click on it, and we can install that certificate. So that's not the way I like to provision certificates. So we've added support for MDMs to provision all the certificates that you need for all the different use cases, whether it's a VPN and Wi-Fi, S/MIME, et cetera. All that can be provisioned to the device. It can also optionally be protected by the TPM. Now, again, we have good data at rest protection because of the way the device is designed, but you may want this extra level of protection because we're talking about identities here. You can use the TPM to bind those certificates to the PC, as we talked about earlier, so that they could never be exported, even if people found vulnerabilities in the Windows OS, et cetera. So you can add that extra level of protection as well. You can also use two-factor authentication. This first scenario really doesn't have anything to do specifically with the phone, so it's more about advertising of a feature we'd like you to adopt for users who are using Windows Phone or even the client. So you probably remember the phone factor acquisition we did a couple years ago. We've integrated that into Azure. So it's now called Windows Azure Multi-Factor Authentication. This gives you the ability to provide an additional challenge beyond, you know, your domain credentials. You can say, hey, well, you've signed in as you with your username and password, but I want to challenge you with one other thing. That could be a text message with a code. It could be a phone call that you just hit pound to and you receive the phone call. And so you now have the ability to do two-factor auth when you access Salesforce.com or any of these other assets that support this capability. And there's a huge long list. If you want to know the list of applications that support this, you can go up to Azure.com and you'll be able to find the list of people. And it's all the big heavy-hitting web services out there, SSAS services out there. All right, but we do also have integrated two-factor authentication. So this is something that's new for Windows Phone 8.1. It came from Windows 8 client OS. It's called virtual smart cards. So virtual smart cards are an awesome feature especially for a phone, because I don't have a USB port on this, thankfully. And I'm not gonna connect a smart card reader to it. That would suck. So we need a different way to do two-factor auth on the phone. And so what you can do is your MDM or another service, a company like Interseed, can help provision these certificates to Windows Phone. There are other companies as well. But basically what we have is we have the ability to virtualize a physical smart card by provisioning a certificate to the device through the MDM or whatever way you provision it. And then we can model that as a virtual card reader and a virtual card. And then, of course, like all smart cards, the user will use a PIN to unlock it. So we can use this in a number of scenarios. For instance, you can use that virtual smart card and the certificate that sits behind it as the means to sign encrypted email. So if I want to sign a piece of email and encrypt it, when I hit, you know, open new mail and I hit send, it's going to ask for a password to sign and send it. And it will then use the virtual smart card to perform that. So this gives us a two-factor option for signing things. I can also use it for secure Wi-Fi and a number of other scenarios as well. So this is a pretty awesome feature, and I think it's pretty kind of market leading in that it's really integrated into the device itself. It's also the same type of factor that your Windows client users who are using Windows 8 or above might be using. So they'll be very familiar with the experience and they'll understand what they're doing, rather than some of the other things I'm seeing in the market, which are maybe less standards like. Another thing that people asked for that's new in Windows Phone 8.1 is the ability to take advantage of enterprise Wi-Fi. So you're able to connect to Wi-Fi on Windows Phone 8.1, but if you needed certificate-based authentication using TTLS or TLS, we just didn't support that. So now that we have the ability to provision certificates to the device, we've also, in an MDM fashion, we also have the ability for you to use that on secure Wi-Fi in your enterprise. So this is this is probably one of my favorite features out there. It was sorely missing in the last release, and this really helps us break through into the enterprise. Another feature that's pretty interesting, I'm not sure if I'd really call this a security feature, but I think it's worth mentioning, is we have a feature called Assigned Access, which allows you to lock the device down to certain tasks. So if you have a user, he's not using it as a personal phone or a mobile device, but let's say that you want them, let's say it's a mailroom clerk, and you have a very specific application that they need to use for mailroom activities, you can actually lock down Windows Phone so only that app runs. And so we do that using a feature called Assigned Access. It's using the app allow and deny list functionality plus some other things, and it also gives you the ability to even lock down certain settings and things in the operating system. So it's not just the locking down the apps they're using, but it also has the fidelity to control which types of settings they can manipulate. So you really have a lot of control with this assigned access feature. We have the same capability in Windows Client OS as well, and they're the same name as well. So I think that brings us, we're right on time, which is great. So what's the conclusion? Well, the conclusion in my view is that Windows Phone 8.1 is now one of the ideal options that you have in the enterprise. It's no longer just iOS and Android. We've got manageability through all the MDM providers. We've got the enterprise features such as S/MIME, enterprise Wi-Fi, the ability to provision certificates and configuration to securely wipe it. All the things that you need that you expect in a mobile platform in a BYOD scenario are now in these devices. So we're pretty excited about seeing adoption, and we've already seen adoption starting to happen in the enterprise, whereas I think before it was a pretty difficult proposition. So that's the high-level overview of the key things that we talked about today. But I want to take questions at this point rather than kind of repeat what we've already discussed. So let's go ahead and take those now if you have any. And then actually, before we get there, one thing I want to mention here is evals. I'd love to get an eval for this session. This is the first time we've presented this session to anyone outside of Microsoft. So this is, I'd love your candid feedback. I would love, in particular, comments regarding, Chris, you didn't talk about this thing. I really want to know more about this particular feature. So give me your candid feedback. If you do, you get, a dollar goes to charity. So if you like people who are in need, you can be charitable at the same time in providing feedback that hopefully will be positive. All right, so let's go ahead and take questions. Right, yeah, so the question is there like a certificate settings node where I can go in and see which certificates are there, et cetera? The answer is no. So the way you get visibility of certificates is by going into a setting that might be able to benefit from it and saying, I want to use this certificate. So the assumption there is the management of the certificates behind the scenes being handled by the MDM, and so we don't give the user the ability to manage them locally. We think that is a more of a cloud management thing. Good question. Any other questions? Yeah, go ahead. So which kind of notifications?
Custom notifications for a user, email, not just texting and phone.
That's a good question. I don't know of anybody, any progress on that, but I can take that back to the engineering team and ask about it.
Yeah,
if you could repeat it so we get it exactly where you said it. Yeah, so the Office team would be responsible for that. It's a great idea because I know a lot of people at work were like, certain mail, when my boss contacts me, I want that one. I don't want cycling.com. Yeah, I mean, that's a great idea. We'll definitely suggest that to the product team. Next question, please. Yeah, there's American Airlines, Delta. Milad, maybe you have some of the list on. Do you remember any others that had done that option? Milad's also from Microsoft here, so he has some visibility, some of the customers.
Emirates would be one of the reference customers I'm working with recently. A couple of banks, which I'm not calling right now. But I think Delta,
Oh, sorry. So the question is, who are our reference customers for phone? And the reality is, in this moment, the list is somewhat small because the features we talked about today were actually show-stopping blockers for large volumes or corporate customers. So we do have some people who are on our early adopter program, Delta, United, Emirates. There's a couple of others, I just can't name them. But this, we're going to see it grow up. There's quite a big program that we have in place right now. Milad, you had something to add?
All right, so in the early adopter program, we are working, I think, globally with 60 major accounts right now to test and evaluate Windows Phone 8.1. And so far, so I'm supporting the early adopter program, and we're doing great progress. Most of the roadblocks we had seen in the past with the Windows Phone 8 was certificates, VPN capabilities, and those are all well fixed, let's say, because we introduced those capabilities now, and we see more and more enterprises getting interested to Windows Phone 8.1 and are evaluating it right now.
Yeah, yeah. We really view this as kind of like the breakthrough release, right? We got what we need to get in the enterprise, and so we're pretty optimistic of what's going to happen next. So, thank you. Another question there in the back.
Without their intervention?
With the MDM, you're able to decide when apps get updated, so there, you can actually provision that for them, so they don't need to go out of their way to receive updates. You can actually force that onto them. Any more questions? Yeah, the slides will be available along with all the, in fact, I think all of the content are already posted. Yeah, and I just made an update up to this deck 5 minutes before the session, so wait an hour or two just to make sure it gets replicated to the right server, otherwise you'll get one that's a little different than what you saw. Not by much, though. Okay, what, another question here?
So I have a manager who hates VPN for some
reason. Okay. So we support that now, actually. So server 2000, oh, sorry. So the question is, can I use some sort of reverse proxy so that I don't need my users to use a VPN to get to on-prem web web services? So the answer is yes. So server 2012, it's either 2012 or R2, I don't remember which one, has WAB, which is web access proxy, which will allow you to give your users the ability to access on-prem web resources from the phone, from the desktop, et cetera. Web access proxy, so WAP. I'm sorry?
Web application proxy.
Web application, yeah, it's not access, good point. Web application proxy.
And also, you know, like, usually the problem with VPN and the passwords, the user has to go and click on connect and all that stuff. On Windows Phone, it's auto-triggered VPN. So the moment you're going to an internal website, it will automatically do the VPN connection for the user. And it will set up
And your manager who doesn't like VPN, as a security guy, I actually kind of understand. A lot of the customers I'm talking to are talking about limiting VPN, because what happens is the more clients you have connecting on-prem with that type of privilege, the more risk there is. And so when you use web application proxy, for instance, you've really narrowed the surface area of where clients can do harm. So it makes sense, but I don't know if it's practical in all scenarios. All right, good question, thank you. Any others? Okay, one more in the back. Absolutely. So the question is, do I have access to control which applications can be used on the device or can be downloaded from the store? So the answer is yes. We have a couple screenshots here. So this is the experience from the store that a user would experience if you had prevented them from using Wordament. So you'll see that there's, as this app is not available to you, when you go to the next screen, you'll see it's not available to you because your IT team decided that they didn't want you to be playing during the day. If they already have the application on the device and they brought it into management, it will become disabled on the device, but it doesn't get removed, but they won't be able to access it. And then you'll see here that this is the experience that they would have when they try to run it. And then I'm sure they'll call you and ask why. What's the behavior difference on iOS, just out of curiosity? Okay. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, because I think iOS technically supports the ability to have something similar to what we have. Sounds like AirWatch hasn't adopted it yet. Yeah, good question. Let's see, any other questions? Go ahead, you got another one, great. It would be it wouldn't be your enterprise Wi-Fi, which would of course require moving the certificates around, et cetera, but your personal Wi-Fi can roam as well. In fact, let's see here. We'll go back to our... There's a feature, actually, that I'm not super intimately familiar with, but there's a way of controlling it. So let's take a quick look here. Oops. Okay. So there's the sync setting. So this is the node where you can control how synchronization is. But the feature I'm looking for here, Milad, remind me of the name of it. It's the ability to share your Wi-Fi settings that are syncing between devices. You can even share that with friends. Oh, yeah, that's right, Wi-Fi Sense. Oh, here, there's Storage Sense. Oops. Oh, it's under there. Okay, I thought it was a node. Okay, so we have this thing called Wi-Fi Sense. And it's a pretty cool feature, but it's kind of scary from a security perspective. So what's going to happen is when you connect to your home Wi-Fi, and then with this device, and you go home to your home PC, that connection is going to roam there as well. You can even roam it to other people. So you can roam that to your Outlook contacts, to your Skype contacts, and your Facebook friends. So I think security people are going to say no way to that.
Especially
if you're this guy. He's got like 10,000 Facebook friends. So you can disable this. I have it turned on. This is just a demo device, but it's disabled by default. So it's a really cool feature, but it's also very dangerous if you have lots of friends like these two guys up front.
Sharing, but how much? This is always the question.
Yeah, exactly. So any more questions? Nope, okay. Well, we finished 17 seconds, 18 seconds over, so that's actually pretty good for us. So anyway, thank you for the time.